Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Labor Day, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I'm excited to have with us Joanna Blore. Joanna is a people accelerator, a futurist, a technology nerd, a belief agent for brave and curious women, and founder of the Amplify Lab. Joanna believes that if every decision made about you and your opportunities are made in a room that you're not in, then you should have a plan, because in your life, there is no professional conversation more important. Thank you so much for joining us today, Joanna.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer.
I'm so excited to have you on the show. It's such a fun concept of how is job hunting like dating? How did you come to draw these parallels on these subjects?
Well, I got broken up with.
Which
was a very painful and emotional experience. And I remember as I was thinking about the exit from the job that, wow, this felt very similar to breaking up with a boyfriend. And that's when I really started thinking about, well, gosh, the entire relationship with an opportunity, whether it's a job within a company or multiple jobs within a company, was a lot like dating, and started to draw all of the analogies from the beginning phase of, you know, swiping right through Tinder versus looking on something like Glassdoor, all the way through to the very sadly, the inevitable breakup at the end, because for all of us today, the breakup happens, and it's an emotional process.
So how can, if it is like a relationship, and if we are doomed at some point or another, I would hope that not all relationships are doomed to be broken up with at some point, but it does happen, especially now more than before. So what are some things that people can do to be empowered when they're in this serious relationship with their employer?
Sure. Well, think about it. The first thing I suggest is actually to think about it like a relationship. You think about, you know, and I'll talk about the first and fun phases of dating. When you're out dating, the reason you decide to date somebody or to go out with somebody is because you want to spend time with them, and you have that lovely kind of butterflies moment with somebody. And remembering in that process for everybody that while it feels like the employer has all of the power in the relationship, and I know for the ladies, we feel sometimes the same way because the guys get quite frequently to do the choosing, but both of you should have that I want you and you want them sort of relationship, and you want to look for the kind of opportunity that does that, which when you're looking the same way when you're looking for somebody to go out with is, you know, sometimes thinking outside of the box on what kind of date you want to go out on, really trying to think about how you are presenting yourself as you're going out on that first date, all of those elements. But then, and I know we don't want to think about the breakup, but actually think about the fact that, you know, you're going to have a first impression with a company, but you are also going to have a last impression. And really having an idea of what is your intention and who do you want to be known for within your tenure at that company, however long it might be. And it might also evolve over time, as they do with relationships. And what we also know from relationships is the more true and honest and authentic, although I'm a little tired of that word, you are with yourself and who that person is who's showing up, then the better experience you have. And that same rule applies in the workplace. It was actually a lesson. It took myself a really long time to finally go, oh, hang on a second. It's when I am 100% me and not a jerk, but I'm not worried about judgment and all of the voices in our head that we think people are saying about us. It's when I'm 100% me that I am the best me. And when somebody chooses me, that person, well, then I get to be me with them, and then they want that person, and everybody wins at the same time. And so you think about that in the employer-employee relationship. An employer's not hiring you because they've written a job description, and they have written a job description. They're actually hiring you because they have a problem and an opportunity that they need to get solved. And they're looking for you to bring that person that they saw in the interview process or on the first date to the workplace. And so making sure at the beginning, that at that first date, that you are 100% you, and that 100% you is manifesting with the workplace, actually ends up making a better experience for both you as the person being asked out and the employer. And again, I think everybody wins at the end of the day. And then hopefully you go for long, very rewarding relationships across the board.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate with you for a moment, because having, and this is just such a fun topic, and I've never heard it brought up in quite this way before. Being somebody who used to go on a lot of dates back in the day, in fact, my husband, it was one of 8 guys I was dating at the time. And when I met him, I knew he was a one because I actually treated it. He was my 3rd date of that day. And so I very seriously treated dating much like I treat recruiting, which is that you're out there trying to seek that ideal person. And so to counter your point, though, if you came in and you were your dirty, smelly, in your bathrobe self, your true you, you know, cat pajamas on and bad breath and your makeup's not done, and maybe you even throw in an F-bomb or two, that might be the real you. But if that real you shows up on your first day of your interview, I think that to a certain extent, we have to present the best version of ourselves, not just, hey, us in our comfies, just being casual, doing us, because I think that could rub people the wrong way, in the same way that if you went in, and like you said, that word you don't like, inauthentic or authentic.
Yeah.
It's that fine line that you have to walk.
I would argue that the real you is not the
pajama you.
pajama. I mean, we all have those days, right? But when I talk about the authentic you and the real you, like I was talking with a friend earlier today about this same idea. And I said, imagine for a second you're going on one of those awesome girlfriend weekends. Those weekends where you go to Vegas or you go to wherever it is you go for fun. And they're so much fun because you absolutely dress up and do the whole thing and I probably wear more makeup and glitz when I'm out with my girlfriend than I totally do when I'm out with my husband too, ironically. And it's so much fun because you're in that space where you can be the brave you, the joyous you, the happy you, the you that isn't being judged by somebody, because the people around you actually love you for exactly who you are. Mm. It's not about actually how you package yourself. Absolutely, I think is important. I talk to people about, you know, the very simplest idea of, you know, if you take this dating analogy together, you know, your Tinder profile pictures are equally as important as that photograph that is shown on LinkedIn.
Of course.
Or if you Google, have you Googled your name recently to see what photographs are being shown up of you, so that you can actually manage that image? And, you know, again, I'm really bored of the word inauthenticity, but if the images that are out there of you are, people will believe the story that is being told, and is that actually the story of who you are and what you're all about? Now, where I do think you can bring the personal you to the office, and where I think there's actually this lovely shift happening in the workplace, is actually bringing your outside interests in. I had a wonderful conversation with a woman the other day who was very senior and going for a VP level job in product management. And we had a conversation about how she would practice her first date. And she was absolutely fantastic at answering all of the very traditional corporate answers to questions about how to talk about what are the keys to product management. And I was like, bravo, doing very well here. However, so was everybody else in the pool that she was swimming in. And I said, well, what is it you do outside of work? Talk to me about who you are. And she said, well, I don't know. And I looked buried on her resume. She actually said she was a hang gliding instructor.
Wow.
And I said, well, that's very different and really interesting. I said, talk to me about hang gliding. And we had a conversation. I said, now talk to me about the idea of hang gliding in the world of product management. Like, how can you correlate hang gliding and the product iteration process within the context of the answers to your questions? And in essence, we ended up with answers to her interview questions that not only highlighting her experience as a project manager, but also highlighting her experience as a totally badass hang gliding instructor. But also on top of that, when she answered the questions with this lovely analogy, was setting her apart from everybody else. She had a little bit of sizzle in the conversation, so that when she left the room and they had finished interviewing everybody else, not only did she have the, gosh, I know what I'm talking about and I can talk about the problems that the company needs to be able to solve in the product management area, but she was also known as hang gliding lady, which made her really different and interesting. And you think again about how you put yourself together and the authenticity of that on a date. It's, if you went out on a first date, you would say, oh yeah, I'm in product management and I do hang gliding. And it tells a story in both senses of who you are.
I think that's genius. In all the years I've been recruiting and interviewing people, I actually am reticent when I see somebody's hobbies. You know, one woman had retail therapy listed on her resume years ago, but I'm reticent to dig into people's hobbies or to even encourage people to put their hobbies on their resume for fear that it could backfire in some way. But your example of the hang gliding situation, that's brilliant, and I could see where that would totally tie in. And I like that you looked at the hang gliding perspective from the business and product management side, because I think not having them be completely disparate and tying the two together and seeing how they coincided, I think was really what brought the whole story together. And now I'm interested in the hang gliding lady.
You're like, who is this lady? I want to refer. Well, you think, like, this whole dating analogy also comes back to this idea that as uncomfortable as it makes people, in the workplace, we are, and well, in relationships, we are buying and selling our time. Now, do we, in relationships with our partners, there's not actually a cash transaction. We want to be with somebody because we enjoy their company. Well, in the workplace, you get a paycheck, so we are buying and selling time. Now, the reality is that your job is not just your paycheck. It's a lot more than that, at least I would hope it would be, because that's what makes it fun and interesting, and you learn stuff. But if that is the question, then it starts to really come to the root of the question of, well, if you are selling your time, then you are the product. And if you are the product, any good product salesperson will tell you, you don't come in and just start saying, well, this is me and this is who I am, and expect somebody to go, oh, awesome, I'll pick that up. You absolutely need to think about, well, what is your personal value proposition? Why should somebody else want to buy you? And this is, I think, one of the most challenging things for people is in the whole how do you find a job process and how do you think about it? First of all, you have to figure out why you are particularly awesome and have a whole self-reflective conversation about yourself so you are really good at actually talking about why you're great. But then when you actually go into the interview process or the networking process or whenever it is that you're reaching out to somebody else, the reality is when you are selling something and yourself in this scenario to somebody else, it's not actually about you. It's actually about what does the other person need and what problems are they solving. So I come back to my hang gliding lady. You think about the kind of company that is looking to hire somebody is looking for somebody who is compelling and unique and authentic and bold and ultimately solves the problems that they need to solve. And so how do you start talking about yourself in that way so that people can purchase you? And it's again, I get people who go, ooh, hang on, I'm selling myself? That feels weird. But in essence, that is what we're doing. Now, coming back to the dating analogy, you get to choose at the end of the day, which is why I use the sentence, every decision made about you and your opportunities is made in a room that you're not in. Because the decision about whether they're going to offer you that opportunity is made in that room. And when I teach sales approaches to people, one of the fundamentals that I talk to with everybody is, if you are in sales, A, your number one step is to actually solve a problem for somebody. Again, the same way you would do as an employee. And second of all, in the sales process, your job is not to sell the thing. Your job is actually to empower the other person to be able to sell it for you. Because even when you're buying a house or a car or, well, maybe not a pair of shoes, somebody else is going to be part of it. Well, somebody else is going to be part of the decision-making set. You know, I bought a lovely pair of shoes the other day, and I came home and my husband said, oh, is that another lovely pair of shoes? And I had the justification of my lovely shoe purchase already ready. He does the same thing with both. We both have our issues. Everybody does, right? But it's actually that conversation outside of the room, and have you given that person the language? And so you come back to the hang gliding lady, and the management team can then go to their boss and say, hey, we had these four candidates, but this one woman was not only ticked all of the boxes, but was super cool because she does hang gliding lessons. And the whole thing, it makes the storytelling much, much easier.
I can see where that would be really effective.
Full of all sorts of ideas about this whole thing.
I know. And so one thing I want to stop and pause on for a moment is the idea of selling yourself, because I know, having been a recruiter for 14 years, the minute you say the S word, it's like you've cussed up a storm and people cover their faces and say, don't say that S word. It's a four-letter word. So what do you say then to somebody out there who might be listening and saying, well, it doesn't matter whether I'm on a first date or I'm on an interview, selling myself is not natural to me and therefore would be inauthentic. How would you counter that point?
Well, but I don't think it is inauthentic. So I think that the use of the word authenticity is being used wrong. So if you are selling yourself and not being truly authentic, well, then you are selling something that is a bit shady and might be snake oil sort of thing.
Okay.
If you are not comfortable with sales, it's not that it's not authentic. You're just not practiced at it. It's just not something that you are comfortable doing, because you don't have comfort with product knowledge being you. So you think about, I have a data point on this. I've done the mathematics on how many times on this dating analogy men ask women out on a date between the ages of 12 and 30 versus a woman. And men, as an example, have 500% more practice just asking for a date, which is, so you sit here and you go, well, because of that, they're more practiced asking for something. Now, I also think they're also more practiced with getting rejection, which is why I think guys have an easier time with asking. There's a lot of reasons, but asking for raises and asking for promotions and going for the stretch job. So it's like, all of my guy friends have gone for the 10 girl that is completely out of their league. They've got practice, and it's practice that gets you good at something, which is why I think everybody should learn these skills. Now, in the same breath, I get heartbroken when I see articles and information that are negotiation tactics or sales tactics where they are using like an FBI or a CIA character to explain negotiation tactics. And in that situation, you're negotiating with somebody who is either in high distress or is not a nice person, is doing something very bad. And yes, you do want to manipulate the situation, which is why I think we still go, ooh, sales is icky. But if I have no doubt all of your sellers who listen to your show will say that no, a good salesperson is actually all they do is listen to solve the problem that needs to be solved. And if you think about why you take a job and why you go into the workplace, yes, it's a paycheck so we can buy our fabulous shoes, et cetera, et cetera. But it's really what your purpose is. And why wouldn't you want to actually be really good at selling the idea of, look, I'm really great at these particular skills and solving these sorts of problems, so that an employer can go, awesome, I want to buy you to do that, so that you can actually do the work that truly satisfies you.
I think those are great points that you bring up, because as reticent or as uncomfortable as it may be for people to even utilize or use the word sell, let alone to go out there and do it, I think it has gotten kind of a bad rap in our culture here mm-hmm. in the Western world. And I think that there is something to be said about being willing to look at how what you bring to the table, your value proposition, can contribute and fulfill somebody else's needs in a unique way. And I think maybe if we even get away from the word sell, just because it does have such a negative connotation, yeah. and transition that to value proposition and articulating that so it's in line with your brand and what you can provide, just like you gave with the mm-hmm. hand gliding lady, I think that's something that people can embrace. And I know one thing I was really interested in that you and I talked about prior to the show was the concept of women trying to oversell themselves, both in the dating world and in the professional world. I know I was not a victim is the wrong word, but I was culpable of that back when I used to date, is we tried to sell the men or the job what we thought they wanted to hear. And in the long run, that can be a huge disservice, because whether you're dating or job hunting, you're going to get broken up with one way or another if what you said wasn't in line with who you really are.
Yeah, this is why you're exactly right. And this is why the process of really saying, okay, well then, who am I in this process and what I want to put out there is super important. Now, I'll caveat that with the who am I when I was 22 was different from the who I am I when I was 47 was different from the, and we will not keep going up because I feel super old, but that the reality that is that can also evolve and change, which then might be the point where you say, oh, well, maybe it's time for me to break up with the company as opposed to the other way around. It's not always, the power is not always in their court, but really understanding, you know, who you're, why you matter, and what is your personal value proposition, and being clear about that. But yeah, I do find, I know I've done it. I've gone out and tried to be something that I thought that they wanted, and it was so not me that it actually came off as a little salesy and a little political. And it backfired on me in a big way. And I was like, gosh, what is the learning opportunity here? And realized that if I was just me, they knew what I was capable of and what I was able to do. And they said, well, we want you to do that stuff, so just go do that. And it was enough. It all comes back to, are we enough, right?
Oh, yes, that is that is the quintessential existential question of, are we enough? And I think that if you personally are ever looking for a job or an individual in a relationship to validate that you're enough, and you're looking externally rather than internally, you will be broken up with one way or another, because nobody else can fill that void except you. But that's a whole other existential conversation.
That's a whole different show.
A whole other show, absolutely. And I know one of the other concepts that you had talked about is the idea of the first love and the first 90 days of that job. What is your experience of being able to suss out whether or not it's the job for you in those 90 days? When you're in that kind of honeymoon period, how do you tell if it's a job worth investing in long-term and looking for a long-term relationship with?
Sure. So I do think both that, I mean, this is why I think a lot of employers say you're in a 90-day probationary period too, is there is that shine and the sparkles that happen at the beginning of a relationship, and whether it's a dating or a working relationship. And we've all been in this scenario in the early dating phase where you ignore all of the signals and all of the signs, where you're like, oh gosh, hang on a second, this person isn't very nice to the wait staff, or is consistently late to meetings or whatever the little tells are that after a while you're like, hey, wait a second, I should have noticed these. Those same sort of tells show up in the workplace. So not necessarily, I mean, I think one should thoroughly enjoy the rose-colored glasses part of employment. It's that first blush of love too. Like, have fun with it, but also be aware, because it is the person you're going to be spending a lot of time with and the people you're around with. So, you know, how do they treat you in the onboarding process? Really being aware of the people around your workspace or your coworkers. Like, you think about, I had a lot of tests I would put boyfriends through with my girlfriends. And we all have that one girlfriend who's like, well, okay, if he passes her, then he's all good. Because you do kind of need somebody else to kind of look at and say, am I being blinded by all of the sparkles in me? And the same way, you can actually see that by looking at other people at the company and how do people have conversations. Like, one of my last employers used to give every new employee a $25 Starbucks gift card.
Aww.
And their job was to take five people, I think it was three or five people, but a couple of people out for coffee who they hadn't met, who didn't work with directly, just to have a chat. And it empowered them to buy the other person coffee, which I thought was a really lovely thing to do, but really allowed employees to get to know the character of the other people in the organization. And the current employees were all highly, highly encouraged to take the time to go have a coffee with these new people, because it shows the character and the culture of the company that you're going to go work with.
That's a great idea. I'm going to completely steal the Starbucks coffee card idea, because it's such a great concept. And I would imagine
it's simple and easy. Yeah.
Yeah. That the culture of that company was one that thrived on communication and being related and connected, which is what we look for when we're entering into any sort of relationship, business or otherwise.
Yeah. And it's terrifying at the beginning. I mean, I think about the first, I moved from England to the United States when I was a teenager. And the rules and the social norms for dating in the UK are very different to how they were in Texas, which is where I moved to.
Geez.
I went from basically Hogwarts-esque school in England to Friday Night Lights in Texas. And understanding how to navigate that, and as a, you know, I was 15 years old, so I was in like the heyday of high school dating, was really complicated and difficult and quite terrifying at times, because I just didn't quite know what was going to happen next. And watching the friends and the friends of the friends and really understanding all of that really helped me in the process. And I think it's why when I started working many years later, that I was a little bit more sensitive to that fact in the workplace, and how were the interpersonal relationships happening, and how do you think about empathy in the organization and diversity and how different people act and all those sorts of things.
I think that's great advice, because you can learn a lot just by observing people. And I tell people, even going into the interview, if you're looking at the culture and there's no talking or people are not smiling, that's really indicative of kind of the culture, which might be perfect for some people. But for other folks, it just might not be their ideal environment. And so you have to, like you said, read those signs and know if it's the right fit. And so if it's not the right fit, how do you plan your breakup in a way that doesn't leave you and the company, or you and the guy in this case, sour?
Sure. Because you don't, I mean, we do all have that terrible, I know I had a couple of terrible boyfriends who I did what I call throw the keys at and said, get out, you were done. But that was usually because they'd done something super terrible, and one would assume that no company is going to do something super terrible. But it's the same advice that you have when you're going in for those first dates. You know, when you're breaking up with a company, I talk a lot about the idea that your last impression is as important as your first one. Because it doesn't matter how long your tenure is with a company, people are going to call for reference checks. Because of LinkedIn and other social media, everybody kind of knows everybody. I think it's, gosh, we're what, like 2.6 degrees of separation from everybody now?
Yeah.
And so what is the conversation that you want to leave them with? And so being really thoughtful, as, and in my case, hurt and heartbroken as I was, I really sat down and I said, what is my intention in departure? What last experiences do they, I want them to have? And so being really thoughtful about communicating how to transition the work that I was doing to somebody else and not just assuming somebody else would do it. Really going above and beyond on making sure that projects were wrapped up or information was communicated, that really I was trying really hard to kind of put my emotion to one side, even though, like, I think in a lot of cases you may have a new job or the kind of shiny new toy might be out there, just remembering to wrap up everything really well and appropriately. And then also, you know, if you know that something's coming to an end, not being afraid to have a bit of the Dear John letter conversation with your employer. You know, I think about an employee who used to work with me at a previous company who said, oh, I'm moving across the country because my spouse got a job and here's my 2 weeks notice. And I said, well, gosh, hang on a second. How long have you known you were going to move? We could have had a conversation about you working remotely and doing all those sorts of things. So really thinking about, like, what are the elements that are you saying you want to break up? What is the intention and what is the word, in essence, that you want to leave? And I'm a big fan, both in your daily life and in your strategy, of thinking about, like, what is my intention word? It's a really easy way, especially when stress gets super high or emotions might be running a little higher, to say, you know, my intention today is to listen or to be generous or to be kind or whatever that word is that is you, so that when things get a little crazy, you can say, okay, I'm going to be generous in this moment and do that thing. And people will remember that. It's kind of remarkable how much people will remember that.
I think that's wonderful advice. And I think it's important on the employer and on the employee side of mm-hmm. when you terminate somebody, or when you're whether you're the company doing the breaking up or the individual who's being broken up with on the job seeker side, I think there's a good and a bad way to do it. Just like we've all been broken up with in a very
yep.
unceremonious way that doesn't leave you. Yeah. You know, recently I got quote unquote broken up with by one of my mentors who wrote me a note, and it was lovely. And it said, you're no longer in this program. And I was like, really? This is like how you're going to do this and not have
this
a conversation?
Is that we're ending it?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, okay, yeah, how old are we?
All of these concepts work for both sides of the equation. Because you think about, you know, if I was interviewing somebody for a job, what is the value that I as a company are bringing to the table? And what I think is really lovely about the workplace today is there seems to be a real shift to an understanding that it's a bi-directional conversation, and that the people aren't just robots and machines to come in and do the work. They're actually human beings who have ideas and all sorts of other good things that they can bring to the table.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think that we're reaching a level in a consciousness right now, I think, in society and even globally, of this mutual respect that I don't think was there before. But I think that it's a two-way street and it has to be symbiotic. Mm-hmm. That if you extend the mutual respect to your employer on your way out the door, like the example you gave of, you know, letting an employee know or letting your employer know that you're going to be moving out of area. I had that happen with one of my own employees a couple years ago. She knew she wanted to move back to New York, immediately let me know. She even did some contract work for us from New York when she was in between jobs, and it left that door open, and I'm always willing to be a reference mm-hmm. for her because of it, versus, like you said, just saying, oh, sorry, I'm moving next week and here's my 2 weeks notice.
Yeah, and the official is 2 weeks notice, this is all I have to do. And it's like, there's an opportunity to go above and beyond. Well, plus we are, you know, so many opportunities for what are called now boomerang employees.
Mm.
You know, people who leave and then go, oh, hang on a second, that was actually pretty awesome, and come back. And so then it becomes even more important, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's about just leaving on great terms. Whether you're breaking up with a person yeah. or a job, it's about being treated and treating others the way you would want to be treated, and doing it with respect. I think if you do it with respect, there's no room for error there, and it's going to at least leave the door cracked open on your way if you ever want to come back to that place, like you said, a boomerang employee.
So maybe we can relabel it. I think it was Gwyneth Paltrow's therapist called it consciously uncoupling.
Oh, that's right.
So how do we consciously uncouple from jobs? And I will say, like, this is consciously uncoupled, and I say actually opportunities, because you think about if you get a big promotion and you move departments within a company or something like that, the same thing is happening. So yeah, how do you consciously uncouple from a job?
Brilliant. I think you have so many great tips, and it is funny to see the parallels between dating and job hunting because there are many similarities. And I think, like you said, is the last impression as important as the first? I think it is. And I leave that with our listeners today is, you know, be cognizant of the minute you walk in the door and the minute you walk out of the door of an employer, and just bring that same consciousness in the day you left or the day you leave on the day that you arrive. So wonderful advice. It's been so wonderful having you on the show today, Joanna. So do you have any other websites or books that you want our listeners to be able to look up or find you? Where would they go to contact you?
Sure. Well, they can all find me at joannablor.com. That's JoannaBlor. They can find me at the same on both Twitter and LinkedIn. I'm at Joanna Blor. I'm always looking forward to having conversations there. And a book is in the works.
Yay.
So I'll be having that later. So hopefully we can come back and talk about it then.
Fantastic. Well, I wish everybody a safe and fun and wonderful Labor Day today. And also tune in next week, September 11th. We have Anthony Ferguson, the voice of BBC News, who is a very famous voiceover actor, and going to share his trip and his story of how he rose to success in his career and what he suggests to people out there who are looking to do the same. Of course, if you miss any part of this show, you can always find it on the archive section of the LA Talk Radio website, immediately following the show under the archive section. And you can also find the show on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes later in the week for full download in case you missed this show or any other shows. So thank you as always for tuning in, and we look forward to having you join us again next week. Thank you, Joanna.
Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.